Well, hello and welcome again to another installment of the Verse by Verse Bible Teaching. This ministry is brought to you by the Wash and Word Hand Car Washing Business. We're located in Churchill, Tennessee on Highway 11W. We're in the Palace Shopping Center, and there you can get your car detailed. You can get just an outside wash. You can get an inside and outside done. We have different options. It's all done by hand. We hand wash it. We hand dry it. And it's we have a very good reputation in the neighborhood, and prices are fair. We just invite you to come on by, and if you enjoy verse by verse Bible teaching, you can support us. We are a self-supported ministry, so your support for verse by verse Bible teaching is to simply come by and keep our business afloat. We pay for the ministry, we pay for the radio airtime, we pay for the website, and all that's done through the income that we earn at the car wash, and so we've opened this car wash as a way to bring verse by verse Bible teaching to you in a way that is a little bit different than what most people are used to. You know, we think that we need to go to church to hear God's word, and rightfully so, and you should, but through almost a decade of experience and opportunity, the Lord has shown us that the church has by and large failed to bring the Bible in a verse by verse format. By and large, it has failed to teach all of God's counsel, all of the scriptures. And so rather than try to change what has apparently infiltrated pretty much the entire landscape of the Christian evangelical church, we decided let's figure out a different way to get God's word out there, something a little less traditional. And that's what we did. We started this car wash, and we put these messages on the radio, WMCH 1260 AM, Monday through Friday at 8:30 in the morning. You can also hear these messages and find out all the information you'd like to about the business, about the ministry, by going to washandword.com. That's wash, the letter N, word.com. And finally, you can just swing by the Wash and Word in Churchill and tune your radio to 107.1 FM. We play these messages on a loop throughout the week. Our phone number is 423-920-0913. That's 423-920-0913. We are going to get back into our verse-by-verse teaching. We're in the book of Ecclesiastes, and if you've ever read this book before or you've been following along, you know that this is a book of discovery. It's a book of seeking, yet to find no real answers. And this is what Solomon did. He spent his entire life looking for the answers to life. And he basically went ahead and looked at every avenue possible. And we left off in our last teaching. We're in chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes, and we read verses 10 through 12 as we left off, and he was talking about having, you know, two people, because he was talking, just before that, he gave an example of a man being alone, saying that, you know, this man was alone, and he labored, and he toiled, but he had no one to leave any of his stuff to, and so the choice for the lonely man, or the man with no kin, or descendant, was, his choices were, A, to work endlessly and toil to leave it to no one, which would be a chasing after the wind for sure, or to stop the toiling since there's no one to leave it to. But as he looked at elsewhere in chapter 4, that laziness or idleness is definitely not the answer either. So he has options. The only problem is all of our options, or his options up to this point, are based on, well, and this is what we touched on in our last message. It's based on what he's looking at in the world. It's based on what he's accomplishing with his hands. It's based on what he sees in his closets. Everything he's drawing his conclusions upon, by and large, for the most part, are being drawn from a looking of the environment around him. And this is where we get in trouble. If we try to make up our minds about God or decide anything about God, about his character, about his blessings, his personality, about his judgment and his wrath and his corrections, if we try to make conclusions about God by looking anywhere else except into the face of Jesus, then our conclusions are flat out plain going to be wrong. Because if you're using the world or you're using other people, whatever it is you're using, if it's not Jesus, you're going to get a little bit askew in your conclusions, because we need to look at Jesus if we want to know what God is like. And he goes into this bit about having two people. You know, if one person alone is no good, what about two people? And certainly two are better than one. In fact, that's how he started off verse 9. He says two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. I mean, and so he's drawing his conclusions now again. It's sort of a, you know, the lesser of two evils kind of mentality. You know, it's not going to be alone, but I guess if it's either being alone or having a companion would be better than, it'd be always be better. And we see this in regular life. You know, if you have a roommate, you're sharing the rent. When, you know, you have a spouse, you get tax breaks for being married. You know, you have two different incomes. Even in the physically speaking, if two people were lost in the wilderness, they would outlive a loner, or one person who got lost and had to be out in the cold, because as Solomon said, they could lie together and keep warm. And though all this is true, here's the sad conclusion of the whole matter, and that is they all end up dead anyway, especially if you don't do anything about the circumstances you might be in. So whether you have let's use the example of being lost in the wilderness, whether you're alone or whether you have two people, if you have two people and you don't huddle up and you remain alone, two people not together is just two alone people. You understand what I'm saying? So like, just because they're together, just because there's two people, I've seen partnerships in business. They went into business as partners, but their partnership became a detriment. And we see it in marriages all the time. You know, there are many, many couples out there who stare blankly at the TV each night together, yet they are alone. And though companionship is better than being alone, he's drawn the conclusion that that is not the answer. It's not the answer. Companionship is better, but it's not the answer. It isn't. There are people out there, and maybe you're one of them, who, before you found your spouse or your girlfriend, or maybe you're still looking for your spouse or your boyfriend, you think that having that person in your life is going to be the answer to your problems, to your loneliness, to the things, you know, whatever the answer, whatever the problem is. That companion is not the answer to your solution, you know, your problems, not the solution. So, and I've been using this phrase, the lesser of two evils. Let's step back for a second and talk about the word evil. I want to say something about evil, because these are one of those words that, excuse me, and again, this is through experience. Now, I've went to almost 100 churches in the last 10 years, as God has led me on this interesting period of life, and you don't hear a lot about evil anymore in our churches. It's a very taboo thing to say, and if we get back to the original question, you know, what is the meaning of life? You know, people look at evil and they see things that are going on in the world, atrocities, and they will base their entire life's meaning and their philosophy upon it. And it works both ways. Some people have rose-colored glasses and see everything, you know, in a pure positive light. Well, that's not reality either. But, and again, it goes back to the last application point from the message before, which was that if we look at anything other than Jesus to base our conclusions about God, we're going to end up with a biased or off conclusion. And so we look at evil around us and we start making up our life's philosophies based on the evil in the world. But listen, evil in the world does not exist. Now, I'm hoping a red flag went up. I'm hoping you're listening to me enough to know that when a statement like that goes forward, you're going to question it. Even though I teach the Bible verse by verse, I'm not always going to say everything right. And that's okay, because the idea of teaching you verse by verse is to prepare you and to get your ears attuned to hearing things that may sound a little bit off based on the entire counsel of God's word that you've been sitting under, hopefully for a long period of time. But again, the statement I just made, evil in the world does not exist. Well, not in a way that supports such conclusions about life and about God and about the world itself. In other words, we can't look at evil as something that is foundational for your belief system. And what I mean by that is evil is not a thing. You understand that? It's not made up of matter or molecules. Evil is not a substance. It's not a thing. God created all things. Do you agree with that statement? Well, of course, I hope you do. God is the creator of all things. He created all things. But friends, evil is not a thing. How many times have you heard somebody say, why did God create evil? Why did he allow evil? Evil is not a thing. So if God created all things and evil is not a thing, well, then what is evil? Evil is a lack and absence in what should be there. Evil is a lack and an absence in what should be there. Basically, evil is a byproduct of free will. It's without evil, we wouldn't have the free will to choose right from wrong or good from bad. That's why the angels, that's why it says, I think in Hebrews, that we don't, that we're actually better off in the angels because they never had the opportunity to choose right from wrong. They only know good. They only know God. They don't have that ability. So evil is a byproduct of free will. Without evil, there's no free will. So if God would destroy evil, well, then he would have to destroy free will. Follow me so far? And if God destroys free will, then salvation ceases to exist. Therefore, evil must have a purpose. Now, I'm going to repeat all that because I want you to take this because it's a good answer to a lot of people who use the evil in the world to defy God or to defy the ability, you know, their desire or God's leading to draw them closer. They use the evil in the world. Okay, so evil is not a thing. It is not made up of matter. It's not made of substance. God created all things, but since evil is not a thing, God did not create evil. Evil exists when there is a lack of something that should be there. So when we choose the wrong thing because we have free will, we create evil by the wrong choice. So evil is a byproduct of free will. So if God were to destroy evil, he would have to destroy free will. And if he destroys free will, then salvation ceases to exist because it is through that free will we choose Jesus. Therefore, evil must have a purpose. God must have a purpose for evil. And he does. But the purpose is not for us to create structural foundations to our belief system. Do you understand that? We do not build on shifting sand. Let's finish this chapter. And the last thing here, he says, better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to take warning. The youth may have come from prison to kingship, or he may have been born in poverty within his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth, the king's successor. There was no end to all the people who were before them, but those who came later were not pleased with his successor. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And this is basically just a long poetic way of saying you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And there's great truth in this, not great depth, but great truth. And so Solomon is saying again, based on his declarations, not a postulate conclusion, but on the lesser of two incorrect positions, youth, though young and often foolish, is better than old and immovable, an old dog new tricks type thing. So old age is not so bad for some. The one thing about getting old is that you can sing in the bathroom while brushing your teeth. I hate to end there because that was a bad joke, but let's go ahead and end here. We'll pick up in chapter 5 next in our next teaching. We invite you again to come by the Washing Word and let us, you know, to support this ministry by coming by and letting us do your car. Come by the washandword.com website for all the information regarding this business and this ministry. And we hope to see you there. Let us know you heard us on the radio. Have a blessed day.